Okay, so what is quantum field theory? Well, it's basically a theory of quantum fields. So field is a function that's defined at any point in space, at any moment in time. And quantum field is, well, it's one result of quantization of this function. So instead of being a function, it becomes an operator. So this should be understood as following. So quantum field theory is basically quantum mechanics for systems with infinite number of degrees of freedom. So we should think of this as a dynamical variable. X is just an index that enumerates all possible degrees of freedom, and T is, well, time. So one can basically write that we have a dynamical system with 1 degree of freedom per point in space. And it turns out that the formalism of quantum field theory allows to naturally unify waves, particles, and forces in one single framework. So, in the first lecture, I will try to, well, make some introduction that is probably relates better to what you already know. And maybe not directly related to our main interest, because we'll be interested in relativistic field theory, where, well, dynamics is invariant under Lorentz transformations, which is a theoretical framework for elementary particle physics. But quantum field theory is used in other subjects, in particular in condensed matter. And so to mostly for illustrational purposes, I'll start with describing how field theory arises in, well, many body systems, and basically in condensed matter physics. So the first example, I'll talk about how particles arise from fields, or rather, how fields arise from particles. Taking, for an example, the derivation of the second quantization in many body systems. So let us start with a system of n particles that interact via a two-body potential. So the Hamiltonian of the system is, well, sum over I p squared over 2m, and plus some interaction term, which we'll take to be a pairwise interaction that depends on positions of the particles. So, well, the wave function of this system is a function of n variables. And if n is very large, 10 to the 23, of course, it's not possible to solve this system by just writing down Schrödinger equation and so integrating it on a computer. So one has to resort to some other methods, and the standard method is called second quantization. So let us start with the simple case where when this potential is absent, so particles are free and non-interacting. Then, of course, we know the answer. Then the wave function is, well, it's just a symmetrized or anti-symmetrized collection of plane waves. So this wave function is symmetric in its arguments when particles are bosons. for anti-symmetric for fermions. And so for free bosons or fermions, the wave function is sum over permutations weighted with the sign of the permutation. If particles are fermions, so the odd permutations should change the sign. And then, well, this is just a plane wave functions. So in other words, any state is characterized by specifying the momentum of all particles, yes? By definition, so bosons are particles whose statistics is such that they are indistinguishable. So if you take a permutation of two of them, nothing changes. And fermions are indistinguishable, but in the sense that if you change the two of them, then the wave function changes sign. So that's why this factor takes care of that. Basically we characterize states by momenta. And this is the complete basis of states. So these states are delta function normalized. Of course, the number of particles, well, we assume that the number of particles is conserved. But even if it's conserved, many times we are interested in grand canonical ensemble. So we're dealing with a system which is can interact with a reservoir. So the number of particles can change, and we want to study the collection of all systems with all possible particle numbers. And so in statistical mechanics, that's called the grand canonical ensemble. And in quantum mechanics, usually this is called the Fock space. So the Fock space is the collection of all states of this sort with all possible particle numbers. So we also include an empty state without any particles. Then we can have one particle state, two particle state, in principle any states with all particle numbers are included. Now, also, the number of particles is conserved, so in principle we can formulate the dynamics entirely in the sector where the particle number is fixed to be, I don't know, 2, 3 or whatever. But it is convenient to introduce operators that act vertically in this space so that they change particle number. So the basic operator of this type is the creation operator. So this operator creates a particle in a given momentum state. Well, by definition, it just adds another particle with a given momentum to whatever had been in the state before. Using this operator, I can generate all the states starting from the empty state. So the state with n particles is then a result of application of creation operators and times. Okay, so we know all the matrix elements of A, right? Because we know what is the scalar product of this type of state. So we can find matrix elements. And then taking complex conjugates, we can compute the matrix elements of the conjugate operator. And so if one does that, one finds that the conjugate operator is the annihilation operator. So when acting on the state with n particles, it produces a state with n minus one particle. Eliminating a particle whose momentum is equal to p. Here is this sign factor takes care of statistics. Hat means that we just cross this momentum. So this operator just takes out one particle out of the state. Now, knowing this, how these two operators act in this complete basis of states, we know their commutation relations or anti-commutation relations. So, which turned out to be very simple. So, for bosons, creation and annihilation operators anti-commute on the delta function. And for fermions, they anti-commute. Okay, so you may ask, why do we need these operators? The reason is that using them, the Hamiltonian can be written in a very compact and economic way. For instance, the free Hamiltonian is expressed through as a linear combination of, it's bilinear in creation and annihilation operators. Now, should I explain this formula? Okay, so what stands here is basically the number operator. So you see that the annihilation operator searches for a particle in a state with momentum p, and annihilates it, but then creation operator reinstates it back. So if we had n particles with a given momentum, then this would just measure, this operator would measure how many particles with this momentum already exist in the state. Okay, so it's one state which contains definite number of particles that just measures how many of them have given momentum. And this is the energy of a particle with momentum p. So basically, the Hamiltonian applied to a state assigns moment energy p squared over 2m to a particle carrying momentum p. And this is what, I mean, the free particle should have. Obviously, all these formulas are written in the momentum representation, which is a natural thing to do for free particles, because the energy of a free particle is a function of its momentum. It doesn't depend on position in space. But once we switch interactions, the interaction operator is naturally written in the coordinate representation. So if you try to write it in terms of creation annihilation operators, it's possible, but the expression will be somewhat lengthy. A somewhat simpler way to do it is to go to coordinate representation just at the level of creation annihilation operators. So we simply take and Fourier transform A and A dagger. And then what we get is the field operator. So we can define operator that depends on x just as a Fourier transform of the creation or annihilation operator. And then, of course, the conjugate operator is a Fourier transform of the creation operator. Okay, so, well, this is what we could call a quantum field, because it's an operator that is labeled by a position in space, by x, and which acts in some Hilbert space. And in principle, it can compute its matrix elements, because we know the matrix elements of the creation and annihilation operators in the momentum space. Now, what is the physical meaning of this operator? So what does it create if it acts on some particular state? So let's consider, for example, what happens when we act by the field creation operator on the empty state. So I claim that this is nothing but a position eigenstate of one single particle. To see this, we need to calculate the matrix element, so we can calculate the matrix element, or just overlap of x with the state that has definite momentum. And then we can substitute the definition of what is x. Actually, let me compute the complex conjugate matrix element. So then e to the minus I p x over h bar. So this is actually, this is q. So p is already used as an external momentum. And then we should find an overlap of p with the state, which is AQ dagger, and then the ground state. And what is this? Well, this is 2 pi h bar cubed times the delta function of p minus q. I think this thing is blocking part of the blackboard, right? So can you see over this line? Can everyone see over this line? This line? Yeah, I can do that, but so is it a fair projection of this table from your line of sight? Okay, so use what?
Space H now. If you go to manual, then you can place
that. Ah.
So the three blackboards you control.
Thank you. Okay, so this is the delta function. Now, can everyone see why is it so? How to calculate this matrix element. Okay, good. So, and then the delta function eliminates the integral, and we arrive at the simple answer that this is equal to e to the minus ip x divided by h. So this is just a plane wave, and this is what we call the position eigenstate. So it's the state that has an overlap, whose overlap with the momentum eigenstate is the plane wave. It's the plane wave function. So the conclusion is that the field operator simply creates a particle at some given position x. So if we act by n field operators will create n particles at point x1, x2, etc., up to xn. And in general, we can create an arbitrary state with an arbitrary wave function. First creating particles at some given positions, and then integrating this with the given wave function. So let me write the formula, and then it will become clear what I mean. Okay, so this would describe a state whose wave function in the, I mean, normal people's language would be psi of x1 to xn, right? So it is an amplitude to find n particles at positions x1, x2, xn, which is now taken care of by this field creation operators. And so this is just a reformulation of the what we already have from the start. We can easily write down the Hamiltonian, so the Schrodinger equation for this function. But now in this representation, we can also write the Hamiltonian simply in terms of the field operators. And this is much more compact than the n particle Hamiltonian per se. So first of all, the field operator satisfies creation commutation or anti-commutation relations that are inherited from commutation and anti-commutation relations of the creation and annihilation operators. So this just follows from commutation relations of A and A dagger. Then if you Fourier transform them, you get these two commutation relations. Now the free Hamiltonian can be written in terms of psi and psi dagger. In a rather simple form. So again, this is basically the Fourier transform of this expression with the number operators. So p squared becomes second derivative in the X representation, and then integrating by parts, we arrive at this formula. Of course, the free Hamiltonian is, I mean, we know its spectrum, so it's not a big deal of rewriting it in various ways. But with the help of field operators, it's very easy to write down what is the interaction part of the Hamiltonian. So let me skip a rigorous derivation, so it will be considered as one of the tutorials problem, but just give some physics motivation. So we can introduce the density operator. It basically measures the probability of a particle to sit at point x. In some sense, we can consider this operator as a counterpart of the probability amplitude in quantum mechanics of one particle. So when we are going from one particle system with ordinary Schrödinger equation and wave function psi of x to a many-body system, we replace this wave function by an operator. So that's why this formalism is called second quantization. So in one particle system, we replace canonical variables p and q by operators. And here we make one more step and replace wave functions by operators. And this way we gain access to many-body dynamics. So instead of acting in one particle space, all operators are now acting in the Fock space where the number of particles can be arbitrary. Now in quantum mechanics, we know that the probability to find the particle, say at point x, is just the square of the wave function, the absolute value squared of the wave function evaluated at this point. So roughly speaking, this is roughly equivalent to, rho of x equal to psi of x squared in quantum mechanics of one particle. Now, the interaction operator is an operator between pairs of particles. So basically, it should be equal to, well, the energy should be proportional to something like probability to find particle at point X, then interaction energy between X and Y, and then probability of to find the particle at point Y. So the interaction energy roughly speaking, it should be something like psi of x squared u of x minus y, and then psi of y squared. Right? And then we should integrate over x and y to find the total energy of a system of two particles, right? So if they're described by wave functions psi, if they're described by a function, some particular wave function. Now, this probability densities now become operators made of fields psi and psi dagger. And so the interaction energy, as we may expect, is equal to the integral of so it is of density type where the kernel is the two particle energy, and then we should integrate over positions x and y. So then we should insert operator rho of x, then the interaction energy u of x and y, and then rho of y. And then we better divide it by half to overcome double counting. So it, so we need this one half to not to count twice the point. So this would describe interaction of particles at point X with particles at point Y and vice versa. So to divide to count it only once, we need divide by two. But also because now this densities are operators. And here they were just functions. There are many ways to write these expressions by ordering operators in different ways. So they don't commute anymore. They are not C functions. And therefore, to one and the same classical expression, we can write down several quantum expressions that are not equivalent, that are different by ordering of various operators. So the correct answer is obtained when we write here normal order expression. So this I'll explain what these notations mean. So when we write an expression of arbitrary operator in this double dot brackets, then we mean that this operator is normal ordered. And what we mean by that is that we take the expression of the operator, which we assume to be a function of, say, creation and annihilation operators, so field operators. And then we put all creation operators to the left and annihilation operators to the right. So this means that all creation operators are to the left of the annihilation operators. So let me maybe give some example which can clarify what is meant by normal ordering. So let's precisely normal order the product of two density operators. So this by definition is psi of x. Psi without dagger of x, psi dagger of y, psi of y. So by itself, what stands under the normal ordering is not quite what we want, because there is one annihilation operator that stands to the left of the creation operator. So we need to interchange their order. So this means that that this is equal to plus or minus of psi dagger x, psi dagger y, psi x, psi y. So the sign is responsible for statistics. So for fermions, even though we do not need to take into account the real commutator and anti-commutator, we should keep track of statistics. So if you interchange two operators, we should produce minus one. So this is the answer. So, or if you use this just a definition of what we mean by normal ordering, we push all the creation operators to the left, and annihilation operators to the right. So this expression actually can be written as without the sign. We can say interchange operators psi x and psi y. So for bosons, they will commute. And for fermions, the creation and annihilation operators anti-commute among themselves. So we can write this as psi dagger x, psi dagger y, psi y, psi of x. So why do we need normal ordering when we write down the interaction Hamiltonian? Well, the reason is simple. We want the we can easily check that without normal ordering this wouldn't work, because the interaction Hamiltonian should annihilate one particle state. So if you have just one particle, it has no one to interact with. So interaction starts only with the two particle states. Yes? No, I do not assume that, because so here this is you are worried about this equality or that equality for both. So without normal ordering, I can also write the expression in this way. So let me, so for comparison, compute unordered expression. So in the unordered case, what we have is the product with the, of just the product of operators, and then we can interchange these two operators. But when we interchange them, we of course should replace, should put a commutator and anti-commutator in their place. So this would be equal to psi dagger x and then commutator or anti-commutator of psi x and psi y. Right, so this is just an identity. If you pull this term on the right-hand side, you see that this what will stand there is commutator and anti-commutator, depending on the sign. The first term is the normal ordered expression. Psi of x. And the second term is the delta function. So this would produce delta of x minus y, psi dagger of x. And in principle, psi of y, but psi of y is multiplied by the delta function is the same as psi of x. Okay, so you see that the normal ordered expression and the unordered expression differ by a commutator term, which is proportional to the density operator. And this is the general case. So if you have some big operator expression, then its normal ordered counterpart will differ from it by certain commutators. So what you do is, well, in the normal ordered case, you just place these operators as prescribed by normal ordering, so that creation operators to the left, annihilations to the right. You can always do this by just commuting operators, but then you get extra terms that are proportional to commutators. So normal ordering just tells us that these extra terms should be thrown away. This is just a prescription. So in this example, it's actually clear why in the two-body Hamiltonian we need normal ordering. Because so this expression, when acting on the one particle state, it will give zero because it has two annihilation operators. So if you have just one particle, so two annihilation operators will, one of them will annihilate this particle and the other will annihilate the empty state. Now here, in addition, we have an extra term which will not vanish even on the one particle state. So this is just the density operator, which is non-zero on one particle states. So if we would have inserted this expression in the Hamiltonian, we would have gotten a wrong answer, because then it would act non-trivial on one particle states. So to, yes.
Psi integral of y in the commutator, anti-commutator on the right side.
Here?
Yeah. So it shouldn't it be
oh, yes.
Psi integral of y?
Yes, thank you. So, yes, thank you. That's precisely, yeah. So it should be psi of x, psi dagger of y. Okay, so, yes. Psi of y in principle, but it is multiplied by the delta function. And so if you multiply any function of y by the delta function, that's the same as. Yes, yeah, it's the commutator of this. So this is the delta function, and then after I write it here, I am free to replace x's and by y's. So it doesn't matter anymore. Okay, so in principle, we could have used this expression in the Hamiltonian, but then we should have added some additional term, which looks as a density operator. So I suggest to make a very short break and start. Let's start at 10 sharp.